far are you going?
About 30 years.
In this week's episode,
another year and another Anime Boston gone by, and we also cover Avengers Endgame.
A week or two ago he said like, well, I can record on Saturday between 3 and 5 or something like that, and like I commented in the Slack chat and sent him an app message saying like, are we doing this, and he never responded. So, I'm not even going to bother with that this time. Just he can just not tell us his story about getting drunk at the con,
which is more than likely what's going to happen. So
he'll be like, oh, my friend had this hilarious cosplay and I got drunk and everybody threw up in the room.
last year the kiddie pool wrestling match in the con room turned into a mud wrestling match, and mud was spewing into the hallway, and it was a big mess, and we just sat there and got drunk and laughed at all the people involved, including the hotel staff.
Right, and then we would have to deal with him hitting on Cloud's sister again, like he was definitely
doing. Oh, yeah.
It's like, she needs to be in the mud wrestling.
If I recall, I don't remember objecting to that, but anyways, that was a
so
year ago.
So are we going to do the con part first, or the Avengers first?
I mean, I'm not sure, Cloud, how much you got to talk about for the con, but if you don't think it's going to be too long, we can get that knocked out, and then I guess we'll talk about Avengers.
Well, I mean, should I go through my whole weekend, or?
If you want to hit up, like,
start at the beginning.
Yeah, or just have to hit up the highlights or something. I can do an introduction real quick. Welcome to the Anime of Yesteryear podcast. With me, my name is Dustin. With me is my co-host, John.
Yes.
And we have our yearly guest that went to Anime Boston, Cloud.
Hello.
And I guess we're going to talk about Anime Boston, and then we got Avengers Endgame to talk about, too. We'll try to get all that in the same episode, so we'll see how this goes. So, Cloud, if you want to start us off with Anime Boston, you can go right ahead.
What? Let me pull up the... I mean...
This year you didn't have a panel, is that right?
Oh yeah, I didn't. I applied rather last minute. I'm pretty sure that was the reason they kicked me off the wait list this time.
Oh.
Wait, so how long were you on the wait list?
Couple weeks before the con.
Okay.
About the time they started putting up the schedule until the convention ran.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I got to the convention Friday morning, and one of the first things I did was I went to opening ceremony. because there wasn't really anything else to do about that time. And at first, opening ceremonies was, I guess, cringy would be the word, because they had this, like pre-show thing where they had this weird robot, thing on the screen called Infobot, and it talked in some voice that sounded like Gilbert. How would I describe it? If Gilbert Gottfried had a sore throat.
I thought Gilbert Gottfried always had a sore throat.
Well, if it was more obvious, I guess.
Gotcha.
And the whole thing, you just kept making bad puns, like, oh, they have desks in schools and they're named after me. Info desks, get it? And I'm just sitting there the whole time like, can someone please start now? The opening ceremonies was okay. And they had different guests come out. And I remember Greg Arias got a pin because he had been going to the convention for 15 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And
he's one of the most popular guests there.
He seemed it because I remember skipping forward a little, there was a panel he did Saturday night and I just came out and saw the line and it was really long. It was like an 18 plus panel.
Yeah. I think Daft goes to those and says they're hilarious. So.
Oh, I have no idea. I have no personal experience. Yeah, that and they had a guest come out and you had just, I guess I wouldn't say hilarious stuff, but like stuff that I got a small laugh out of. Like, there was a point Yoko Shimomura, the composer for Kingdom Hearts and stuff, came out, and the translator was all ready to see what she was going to say when she ended up saying it in English. And so the translator just switched in, belted out completely fluent Japanese instead.
Oh.
Wait, so was this a scripted thing?
Maybe, but at least the reactions, they tried to play it as if it wasn't.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And then, for a couple of the guests who were mainly there for their work on that City Hunter movie.
Yeah.
They played a few clips of what they worked on, so for, I think it was Go Wakabayashi, who unfortunately was not at opening ceremonies because I guess his plane was running late. They played the clips, if I remember right, was stuff like Saint Seiya Omega and a trailer for this Pretty Cure movie.
Mm-hmm.
Which I was just like, something official is noticing Pretty Cure? What is this? Stuff like that, and I wish I could remember this one person. They made him seem official, and they had like, I wish I could remember his name, but they had some recording of him talking to the audience, and he was just done. He was just starting off, and he had these sunglasses, and he was trying to do a Gendo pose. That was kind of amusing. Yeah, then I got out of opening ceremonies, and the first thing I did was, I went up to the third floor of the Heinz because there was some Pretty Cure photo shoot going on. And so I took some pictures. Just there.
Okay.
What is it? nothing particularly big happened until I mean, Saturday my sister went, but nothing I'd say really big happened until I went to the showing for that City Hunter movie Saturday night.
So, and wait, was this like a screening for the City Hunter movie?
Yeah. It was subtitled and everything.
And you watched the whole thing, right?
Yep.
How was it to you?
Oh, it was glorious.
Okay. I'm kind of curious on that City Hunter movie also. I think... Wasn't, like, I remember you bringing up stuff in the chat about how, like, I don't know, Twitter getting ticked off because, like, the themes in City Hunter would be offensive to SJWs or something. Like, was there any kind of, like, backlash or people complaining about, like, how Rio is sexist or something?
Okay, so, just to clarify for the listeners, when I mentioned that was, it was first at the Sunrise panel on Friday that the interpreter lady who was with, shoot, I'm going to mispronounce his name, Naohiro Ogata, mm-hmm. who had worked on, who was one of the staff members, she mentioned that she wasn't sure how people were going to react because stuff like Rio Saiba being a, well, I guess a per and stuff, she thought would, best way I can put it, trigger the Me Too movement, as she put it.
Mm-hmm.
And who got to the movie, and from what I can, from what I recall from the audience reaction, nobody had a problem. Like, everyone got a good laugh whenever he was being a perv. And the first moment with Kaori, I don't know if this might just, I'm not sure if it's a spoiler or not, but yeah. Her first moment, she runs in and she hits Rio with like a giant hammer, as people probably know.
Yeah, and that's the, like the main pun or joke that happens, is she's always hitting Rio with something.
Okay. Yeah, she hits him with a hammer that says, Film Souvenir Theater 2019, and as she's doing so, she screams, get with the times already! And the whole theater sort of... I cracked up laughing and cheering, but Yasuo laughed every other time he was a perv, so I don't know.
I think either that, like, either Me Too movement anime fans either don't know what City Hunter is, or they would rather go do something else and not go support it. So that's probably why you had a lot of positive people in that theater that are. And the screening, or, you know, at this panel, that, you know, they're just, that, you know, they're actually pretty cool. Like, that's how I think, like, you know, you, it's kind of like you take all, like, the Me Too, SJW, PC, anime fans on Twitter, and you figure, like, you know, they act like they make up the entire anime community, and you go to an anime con, and they're, you rarely run into them, at least from my experience. You may run into a few of them. I know that happened to Daryl Surratt, and he basically, like, booked away from that this girl, like, as quick as possible. Because he was telling me about it later, and he was just like, yeah, I had to get away from her. And, yeah, it's kind of like, you know, him and me were talking about it at AWA last year, and we were just kind of like, I just think it's like, you know, I'm just like, hey, I just, sometimes I don't know if these people are just kind of like, you know, it's just all for attention or whatever, or are they really, like, real people? And he's just like, yeah, they're real people. So, but I think in this case, it's like they will, I guess most of them probably don't go to anime cons, and they just sit in their houses and rooms and sulk all day, is the way I understand it. So, like, you know, they act like, you know, they're this big conglomerate of people that's going to take down the anime industry and change it, when really, you know, no one, you know, you're not going to find about anime cons. It's mostly like people that act kind of normal in a way. So, you know, they don't act all like the Twitter personalities or whatever. So it's really nice.
I think the Me Too contingent of the anime community is busy fending off lawsuits from Vic at the moment.
Yeah, but they're not, but I feel like, you know, they're all going to, oh, we're going to, you know, boycott this panel. And then, like, you know, they act like 300,000 of them are going to show up. When it's really like three people. So, Again, this is to my understanding and interpretation. I could be wrong.
Well, definitely
but...
when Vic and was it that Kamehameha Khan in Hawaii, he was like a big draw. You know, he's a little big guest, even though there's people
Online. I thought that Kamehameha Khan was in Austin. Was it in Hawaii?
Yeah, it's Hawaii.
Oh, okay.
Because they have the King Kamehameha. That's where. That's where Toriyama got that name from. He was like this long line of kings that were in charge of Hawaii before the U.S. took it over.
Gotcha. Okay, that's
I think it's in Honolulu or something.
That's true. Okay, now that makes sense. But, yeah, anyways, Claude, continue.
Yeah, I've never seen any City Hunter, so I can't really comment on
that. So the City Hunter that I know, I've seen, like, part of the first season. There's the live action Jackie Chan movie, which is one of my favorites, and I've got some of the Raging Comics manga that they released. I've only got like the first three volumes of that, so I've read those. I from what I've seen of City Hunter, like it's something I would definitely enjoy, and I really do dig like what I've seen of City Hunter. And that's pretty much that's all I know about it.
This is a 1980s series, or
yes, it is. And fairly enough, like women in Japan really like City Hunter, because it's Ryo Saba is a man's man, and like in the manga, like it did very well because like there was always erection jokes. So like, what female doesn't want to look at a male getting a boner every time? So that would make sense, and like. I mean, yeah, so, like, I just know it was popular with women, and then you got, turn around 30 years later, and it's, like, it's going to be offensive? Like, come on. But, anyways.
So, the main character is a womanizer?
Yeah, he's a womanizer. Yeah, that's the joke about him, is that he's a womanizer, and I guess, like, secretly women, like, want an aggressive man like him. So then, like, they'll read, the manga or whatever.
Yeah, even when there's a gag that's been done 100 times like that, that has like a character who, propositions every woman that comes near him and then gets smacked around by the other female in the cast, they tend to keep that even if it's been a long-running joke, which might seem dated now. Like, Brock was just back on the new last couple episodes of Pokemon, and they still have Misty, like, dragging him off by his ear. When he goes up to Nurse Joy and starts hitting on her, like there's some jokes that Japan won't let go of.
You know, it's interesting how neither of them have really aged in 20 years.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, how long has time passed in the Pokemon world? Like, Ash ought to be like, really in his 30s at this point. And he's still like, he's like, what, technically 16 or something?
No, he's still 10.
I guess that's how, like, Bart Simpson, The Simpsons, like, they've retained their age for 30 years. So.
Yeah.
They'll never grow up. Or South Park characters, like, they just stay kids.
They had Brock leave the main group to go train with Nurse Joy to become a Pokemon doctor. And she's, like, giving him a new Pokemon called Comfey that appeared in the new episode. And he's been. Training with her and her career has been advancing and all this, but simultaneously zero time has passed in 20 years of the show. So,
yeah, he disappears for like, 15 years and then he comes back. And
yeah.
I don't know, that's just odd to me, I guess.
But that was a really good episode. They had this Devil Gundam reference where Team Rocket.
Yeah, I saw the clip for that.
Yeah, it was really funny. And Rocket is a. He's doing the pose where he like puts his hands together with this Olivia character that he's in love with, and they're like posing like Domon and Rain, and there's a lot of great G Gundam references. I don't know how many American kids watching this are gonna like
understand that it's related to G Gundam because most of them are not gonna be Gundam fans, so
right. But I think that even if you haven't seen G Gundam, it would still be funny.
Yeah, it's still, like, from what I saw the YouTube clip, it was still an entertaining scene, so.
Okay, so enough of Brock. I guess we'll get back to City Hunter.
Yeah, or Anime Boston.
Yeah,
Anime Boston. Oh, where was I?
You were talking about the City Hunter movie that you saw.
Oh, yeah. I can't, it's hard to talk about because I don't want to spoil everything.
Well, I mean, you don't have to talk about the movie, but I mean, like, if you talked about the panel or, like, the theater, like, it seemed like you just kind of described it, and that's kind of what we went on this 5-minute tirade about, so.
Yeah, it sounded like people were enjoying it, so I guess that's all we really need to know.
Yeah.
And we'll see it eventually, probably.
Yeah, people were enjoying it, and there were a lot of people who, during the question and answers, were saying they were now fans of it, and with Discotech licensing the classic, the movie and the classic show, total plug there, more people should be able to check it out now.
Yeah, I'm even hard-pressed to get those City Hunter sets from Discotech, because the only reason the only way we had it released in America was through ADV when they had it. And they had these, like, big clamshell cases for it. But then eventually, like, over time, the value of those things have skyrocketed. And I remember seeing them, like, you know, kind of cheap maybe 10 years ago or so. And I kind of regret not getting them. But at the same time, it's like, you know, now we're getting a re-release. And you can get the whole series on a, you know, it's probably going to either be, like, in HD on Blu-ray or standard. I'm not sure how it's going to come out. If it's either standard edition on Blu-ray discs. Or they have, like, you know, they have a Blu-ray set in Japan, so then they're just putting the Blu-ray set here in America that way. They're just kind of bundling, you know, three series into one collection for, like, 70, 80 bucks, I guess.
I remember at Paradise Video Rentals in Phoenix, they had the City Hunter, like, OVAs or movies that were animated.
I mean,
I never checked them out, and that's... stores out of business now. But.
I mean, I have the motion picture and, like, Bay City Wars, and I think another one, like, on VHS from ADV. Those are still sealed, and I have never opened them, and those are just sitting in storage at this moment. So it's like, you know, if I'm going to get it, I might as well just get the upgrade to the Blu-ray.
So, yeah, Discotech has that stuff as well, not just the series. They have, like, movies and...
Yeah.
Okay, well, I recommend our audience check that out, and also buy it from the Right Stuff store.
Yeah, we might. Definitely. You know, if you can buy it from Right Stuff whenever they have a sale for that, and eventually we'll probably get around to reviewing City Hunter one day. So we'll see. So what else happened at the con, Cloud?
While you're doing that, I was going back through the thing I started typing up because. I need to refresh my memory. But skipping back to Friday, what was it? The only other things that happened was Friday afternoon when I was... Well, no, that's not important. I was going to mention that on Friday afternoon when I went to get lunch, I heard this one cocktail, and for some reason I ended up... I ordered this cocktail, but I didn't pull a daft and probably, like, ordered another cocktail right after, yet I still felt dizzy.
I don't think you can properly pull a daft. Like, I think, you weren't even close to daft levels of alcohol stupidness.
Yeah,
you would have to get on that's the chat good. And start, like, spamming it with just... constant insults.
If you were really that drunk, you would have been on the chat at like 11 o'clock calling everyone gay and effing telling everyone to F off. And do that like for about 5 minutes, and then we don't hear from you for like 2 days.
Right.
No, noted.
There you go.
Okay. The next thing that happened on Friday was I started going to this one panel called VoiceOver 101 with Kara Edward, who is the voice actress for focus on DBC. She was Fidel, Goten, and half a Goten. And I didn't say that panel because I didn't exactly want to hear people asking the same questions about getting into voice acting over and over. Because I kind of assumed that was how it would go.
I think that's usually how it always goes.
Were you wearing your Fidel costume at the panel?
Friday and Sunday I was wearing that, yeah. So was it? So after I left that panel, I went over to a photo shoot for, happened to be for Dragon Ball characters, and then ended up, between me and some other person, ended up being two Videls there. There was also a Dragon Ball Super Broly, a Avela, the Dr. Slump girl.
Ariel, yeah.
Ariel, okay.
Ariel, like the little mermaid.
Well, I think it's, I always thought it was Ariel or something. I thought it was Ariel. Yeah, that's the way I've looked at her name, but it might be pronounced different. I don't know. I think it's Ariel, maybe?
You know who?
I think it's Aureli, but I don't know. They don't have very many appearances with her in the English language.
That's true.
I mean, she appears like in like the that one song where Goku is like fighting General Blue in the Pinkman Village in the original Dragon Ball. And then she's only in like one or two episodes of Super, so...
Yeah, I remember that episode.
Who else was there? There was a Vegeta, a Future Trunks, a Bulma. This one girl tried cosplaying as like a makeshift Shenron. but yeah, so that was fun. And, so skipping forward to Saturday, I initially wanted to attend this panel called Time Travel in Anime, since my sister and I were doing characters from Steins Gate, which is focused on time travel.
Mm-hmm.
But between my sister having to get a badge, we ended up getting there too late. So we went to this one panel instead called, and this actually the name, Fight Like a Girl, The Importance and Impact of the Magical Girl Genre.
I wonder who was running that.
some person I don't know the actual name of.
was it a dude or a girl or like multiple girls?
It was one girl.
It was a girl or a guy?
It was a girl.
Okay.
But yeah, the panel was about as you'd expect. Like, look at this clip of Princess Tutu. She flies around, she dances, and flowers are there, and this is so feminine. And...
girl power.
Yeah. Or this one bit about, like, guys crying to play this bit where, from Steven Universe, where... the group thinks Steven has crying tears, or was it healing tears like his mom? But it doesn't work because it's actually his bed. And, like, look, this is important because he tries to cry and he's a guy and stuff like that.
Wait. So this woman,
the universe isn't even anime.
Yeah, okay, not only that, but this person thinks that, like, men don't cry, period?
Something like that, or, I think it was either that or the fact that right before he did try to do some magic ago, like, stock footage, and it was something that, men can cry, yeah, I think that was it.
This is a big thing among SJWs. They like to say, like, oh, this series is so progressive because it shows that men can be in touch too with their feelings too, and they don't have to have this toxic masculinity.
Okay, okay.
Suppressing everything.
Okay. Has this woman ever seen a shonen show or read a shonen manga, like Fist of the North Star or One Piece? There was a whole lot of definitive, awesome masculinity, and plus men bawling their eyes out. And it's beautiful. Both of those shows. Yes. Freaking Vegeta, I think he cries too, in Dragon Ball Z.
I think that's right, like when Vegeta has to like walk out his son and then go fight Majin Buu.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he cried, like he had some tears over that. Like when men cry, it's a big deal when a guy cries, like, you know. And in One Piece, like, there's been scenes, like, where I see, like, how emotional it is. It gets me going.
Like when they're burning the ship?
Yes, well, that was one. I think one of the big ones was when Sanji, like, left to go to the ship, and he had his chef that he was serving under, and he was, like, you know, it was like that whole, like, you know, male hierarchy thing of, like, you know, how he respects his chef master, and he's leaving. And like I remember, there was, like I wanted to cry at that scene, and it was a flashback.
Oh, the chef is a character that he was working under. That was
like that's a powerful scene. And it's over the top tears, but it works so well.
That guy had like cut off his leg and fed it to Sanji when they were like all alone on an island, like, and Sanji was starving or something.
Mm-hmm.
And like Sanji was like crying because he had to eat a foot or something. But yeah, there are a ton of emotional scenes in shonen anime. Like people are always crying in One Piece, and they got like snot coming out of their nose.
I mean, Usopp's the biggest crybaby for sure.
Right, the huge nose. Yeah.
Yeah, but like to me, he's still a man. So.
Yeah. I mean, he has to like swallow his pride and admit that he was wrong in his fight with Luffy and all this stuff. And so, I mean, they have a lot of emotional arcs and that kind of stuff. So it's not like it's just magical girl shows that are interesting.
Yeah, just because a guy has a reason to cry that's different than how women cry, you know, doesn't mean it's toxic masculinity or any of that bull crap. And it's sad that she has to use, like, say that Steven Universe is a progressive show because they turn Steven Universe into a girl, basically. Because he cries with the girl because girls can empathize with that. They don't see, like, the dude's crying, but they have no connection with that, but only the guys would understand.
Yeah. I have not watched Steven Universe, but I did see that that controversial video that, I don't know, PewDiePie linked to or something. There was this big thing where someone from the alt-right or something made this long 30-minute video ranting about Steven Universe and how it's propaganda and... at the end, he includes like a clip of Hitler or something, and then the video got—I think it got banned from YouTube, but someone re-uploaded it or something. People were like, "Is this proof PewDiePie is a Nazi?" And because he had linked to this guy's channel, but I mean, this guy had like gone through every episode of Steven Universe, even though he hated it, and he was like, "This show is promoting people being weak or something like that," or and he had all these clips of like, you know, Steven crying and that kind of stuff. And I don't know. I guess some people really hate Steven Universe, and some people really love Steven Universe, but it just doesn't interest me to see it one way or the other.
I guess there's more people that hate watch things than Lord Dalek.
Right. I mean, there are people that do that.
Oh my gosh. Well, that was an interesting discussion or commentary on a panel that we never went to, but only Cloud went to.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought that Steven Universe would be at an anime Boston panel, but
it shouldn't have been. But it got approved. Oh well. But the thing with panels at cons is like, you know, they're like, "Oh, what are you going to be showing?" or "What's the context?" And then they'll preach it up, and then someone can just turn around and do a 180 because they have that hour of time. It's under their control, so it's basically their show. They can do whatever they want, and I'm sure, like, no one's going to complain about, like, you know, Steven Universe shown at an anime con when the panel's supposed to be about anime, when there's bigger fish to fry and complain about.
Yeah, and I'm sure a lot of anime fans are fans of Steven Universe.
That too. But that would be relatable.
I think people consider it a magical girl show because I've seen, like, images of Steven Universe in, like, a pink tutu or something. and I think Jim's probably like transformed or something, like Natural Girls. I don't know.
All right. Well, anyways, well, Cloud, continue.
So after that panel, my sister and I went to get lunch, and when we came back into the Heinz, I was looking on guidebook, and there was a panel called "The History of Digimon in America." We considered going to, but that panel was in the Sheraton, and we just got back through security, so we weren't really in the mood to go to that, as interesting as it might have been.
Uh-huh.
So instead, we went to one called "The History of Kiwani" instead, and Kiwani being the people who animated, oh god, Haruhi, Lucky Star, huh?
Oh, I was just saying Haruhi. Yeah, that was the first thing that came to mind.
Well, then you said Lucky Star, and I was like, oh god.
Yeah, Haruhi, Lucky Star, Kaon, Clannad, Ki, Air, all those.
Wait, so what was this panel called again?
The History of Kiwani.
Oh, the studio. It's not like, it didn't have like a subtext of like the worst anime made by one studio.
Oh, no.
I think it's short for Kyoto Animation, so that Kyoani is just one studio that made all that stuff.
And they're probably still around for some ungodly reason, I'm sure.
Well, those were all, I think, popular shows. With at least some subsection of anime fans.
Gotcha.
They made a lot of money.
But yeah, we went to the panel and, I talked to people that knew their stuff, but at the same time, seeing stuff like the Haruhi dance, I'm just like, this isn't, I don't want this nostalgia. I don't want to go back to the early 2000s.
Nostalgia is usually painted in a good light. I do not consider that dance any kind of nostalgia. It's like worse than the Macarena. Macarena has nostalgic factor, but I'm glad that that dance should be buried and killed in the 90s like it should be. Same with the Haruhi dance, but the Haruhi dance, way, way, way worse.
Yeah, the Macarena, I guess, still has like a cult following because at the end
you
of
can do the Macarena.
They were doing the Macarena and that like defeated the monster with their
fucking. Well, I mean, like you go to a wedding and you pull out the Macarena, and I just roll my eyes and I'm like, God damn it, I know this dance, and you go out there and do it, and then, it was just kind of like, yep, this is the thing that happened. I feel like Gangnam Style is like the new Macarena, or was.
Is that still a thing?
oh my god. So I just got back from a Mexican restaurant since we're recording on Cinco de Mayo, and we went to this local place, and they had a DJ set up there, and our table happened to be right in front of the speakers of the DJ table, so the entire time during my entire meal, I couldn't hear anything anybody was saying, and my family and the friends that we had, and one of them had some video of like babies doing Gangnam Style. And I'm kind of watching all of this because I have, like, full view in front of, like, four speakers and, like, this Latino dude sitting behind a table with, like, three laptops and he doesn't know how to use either one or doesn't know how to computer. And he's just, like, clicking on videos. Like, it was basically, like, let's hire a DJ for Cinco de Mayo to entertain white people. That's essentially what it was.
Were they playing the Macarena?
No, they did not play the Macarena.
So, La Bamba.
They might have played it before we got there. La Bamba was pretty good. No, they played that one. They played that one song at the beginning of Desperado. That's actually a really good song. So I was like, hey, I know this. Anyways, yeah. So Gangnam Style still got play, and then, God forbid, he played Baby Shark. I think it got to the point where all the Spanish songs were taken up. So he's like, all right, what's popular now? So then they play that stupid Baby Shark song. Which kind of rattles in your brain, and the only way to get it out is if you blow it out with a bullet. Anyways, that's my rant. I'm sorry. Continue, Cloud.
Oh. But yeah, what was it? Went to that panel, and then about, what, at 1:30 p.m. we went to another panel talk, another panel named Talk Dragon Ball with Kevin Edwards, and that was pretty fun. She, what was it? There was one point where she was saying that she, I guess because she didn't voice Goten and GT, she kind of wishes she could go back and record. But then at the same time, she said, but also it's GT, so I kind of don't.
Who was, there was a different voice actor for Goten and GT?
That's what I heard.
Okay.
I don't think I remember the name. And yeah, she was saying how she wishes Fidel would be in the Tournament of Power because, partly because it's Fidel and she deserves a better fight, and also partly she doesn't really have anyone to voice right now.
Yeah, they could have brought Goten and Trunks at least, instead of like Yamcha and Master Roshi. I mean, Tien and Master Roshi.
Yeah.
Well, Videl's home, so someone's got to watch that baby of theirs because Piccolo's in the fight.
Yeah. So I guess they could leave it with Mr. Satan. I don't know.
That's true. That's a good point. Yeah. Mr. I mean, like, he's the grandpa, so. I don't know. This is Toriyama.
Yeah. He doesn't seem to have much interest in using Goten anymore. So that must suck for Kara Edwards, because Goten is, like, irrelevant to Super. You know, at one point, right after the time skip in Dragon Ball Z, when they bring in Goten, they're like, he became Super Saiyan at 7 years old. He could be even stronger than Gohan. And then they have, like, Gohan and Goku and Vegeta all written off, and they have Goten and Trunks. They're, like, building them off like they're going to be the strongest fighters ever, and they're going to defeat Boo, and then they just like get dropped after they fail to beat Boo.
Yeah, they build up all that story, all that plot and story, and like, you know, that time and effort to making Goten and Trunks like, you know, the best warriors in the universe. And even Goku was like, I'm not going to interfere because I want these kids to fight their own battles. Like, I know they can do it, and. Then Goku winds up saving the day anyways, so, you know, go freaking figure.
And he admits that he could have beaten Boo at Super Saiyan 3, and he just chose not to, because he wanted to leave it to his 7-year-old son to deal with instead.
Yeah, kids gotta save the world sometime. I did that when I was 7. I mean, look at Gohan. He saved the world at like 11 or 12, so.
But they were brought up during peacetime, so they're just like moving off while they're fighting Boo, and they're like, they're just showing off in front of Piccolo, and they don't have like serious moves or anything.
Oh yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
No thanks. I don't think he even appears in Super. Like maybe once fighting Beerus or something. But... So I'm sure that sucks for Kara Edwards. And Videl is like irrelevant in Super. She's. Occasionally appears like baby with her baby, but she's what, 5 episodes or something.
Yeah,
she's barely there.
Hello.
Yeah, we're here. We're just. I thought you were saying something.
You can go back to.
Oh. The...
Yeah.
Yeah. The only other thing I remember from the panel was I think this might have been about her not being in GT, I forget. But there's one person in the audience who was like saying that, well no, I remember this and I remember something else, so I'll mention that after. But there's one guy in the audience who was saying that if her Goten sounded odd, then how do you put it? It's something like, those people should shut up because Goku in Japan sounds like a 5-year-old, even though he's like 40. And the whole, and most of the audience are clapping here.
That would get hate on Twitter. I know a lot of people get really angry if you criticize Nozawa.
Yeah.
The usual criticism is that Goku sounds like an old woman because he's voiced by like an 80-year-old woman, but
she's like 99 or 98 at this point, I think.
Yeah, it's like an ancient woman trying to sound like a little kid. So it's just the most bizarre.
Hey, man, she's been around since the Tezuka age, man. Give her some respect.
Yeah, I don't diss her performance or anything.
No, I won't either, yeah.
I understand that some people don't like that as much as Sean Schimmel or what they grew up with.
Okay, there was also one point she was talking about scripting lines for Goten, and she ended up basing a lot of his lines off how her 3-year-old son would react to. So,
I guess they have to be kind of creative with the dubbing on Dragon Ball compared to other shows. Like, they had that line a few weeks ago where Goku said something like, "Silly rabbit, tricks are for kids." Like, I'm sure that was not in the Japanese version. Or,
That's it.
"Oh, shoot, he's not black." That was
a double. Twitter got mad over that, even though that was an accurate translation of what happened.
Yeah, that's the kind of idea of stuff I was thinking about. Another bit was Kevin Edwards saying that at first she didn't understand why Kiki was so crazy about everything, and then she had a kid and she said, "Well, now we can understand. Every kids drive you crazy."
I guess that helps to understand like why Pam is a brat.
These people need to work at a preschool for like a week, and then they understand exactly what all kids are about. So,
or just remember your own childhood.
Well, your childhood is better than what you remember it to be. So let's just be honest.
But I mean, everybody remembers dealing with like other kids who were rats or whatever, like on the playground. You know?
Yeah.
I think a more direct quote was something like, "I thought Kiki was unhinged at first, and then I had a kid, and now I completely understand." But after that panel, my sister left, and she went home, and I just kind of hung in a dealer's room before that City Hunter movie I mentioned before. Mm-hmm. And I bought some stuff. Well, I bought some stuff. I bought some stuff all 3 days. So that doesn't really say much. Not much really happened on Sunday. I mean,
what kind of stuff did you buy?
There's kind of a list.
Okay.
What was some of the big things you got?
Big things would be a couple of CDs. Like, one was a Zeta Gundam soundtrack.
Oh, nice.
And the Gunslinger Girl image album that I just really wanted in my collection.
These must have been that booth where Daft was like, "Oh, you should have been haggling with them because they're so overpriced."
Yeah, that one. Jukebox Imports. But
Okay, I didn't know if it was a Taco Joe's or something. Taco Joe's usually, they're the for old school taco and people that like that stuff, like me, where they have like basically vinyls and Laserdisc movies, but like old figures usually, but then they also have like, they'll sometimes carry like anime cassette tapes, 45s, or those like mini CD singles that I picked up, like the Victory Gundam stuff. And those have anime soundtracks too.
You bought like a vinyl from them and you played it during one of our recordings?
Yes, yes. Yeah, that was like when I played all those vinyls when I went to AWA. That was, they all came from Otaku Joe's.
Yeah, I don't know if they go to Anime Boston or if they're like a regional.
I mean, Anime Boston's a big con, so I would imagine they might be there. They might be in Animazement probably this year. I'm actually going to be skipping Animazement. I just don't have the funds to go, but I'll probably be going to MomoCon for a day because it's the same weekend. Suda51's going to be there, and Shinji Aramaki's going to be there, and I'm hoping to get something signed by both. So, and if they have panels, especially Shinji Aramaki, I'd like to go check that out. So we'll see.
Is that Atlanta?
Yeah, that's in Atlanta, so it's a closer drive for me.
Okay. Yeah, I know that con, just because Toonami sometimes does panels there.
If they have a Toonami panel on a Saturday, I'll definitely check that out. I'll just have to see what the schedule is.
Yeah.
But so anyways,
was there anything else that you purchased there, Clint, that was interesting?
Yeah.
The other things I bought were just some light novels, a DBZ hoodie. It was like orange and had the Goku logos on the front and back. It's some kanji. I don't know what it is exactly.
Uh-huh. Like King Kai's and Master Roshi's symbols on the front and back or something like that? Like on his gi?
Something like that, yeah. The other thing was a figure art, Aikatsu figure art, and a couple plushies. One was one of Z-God, how do you pronounce it? Z-Gade, the Pokemon. Little incomplete.
The green Pokemon that Bonnie has in the XYZ.
Yeah, that.
I think it's called Zygarde.
Yeah, I bought a plushie of the little...
Huh? Or just Squishy, as they called it. That's their nickname for it. The dog.
Yeah, I bought a plushie of him. And... the only really big things I did on Sunday was I went to a panel for Billy Kametz, who voices... one of the roles he does is Josuke in JoJo Part 4, the one that's even on Toonami right now. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, cool.
So that panel was fun, and he talked about how he got into the voice acting biz and stuff like that. And there was one funny question where it was one of the last ones. I think the question was something like asking him his thoughts in episode 1 of Shield Hero, and he just kind of quickly goes, Mina is the worst character in Shield Hero, and that's all I'm saying.
Oh, is this the anime where some woman falsely accused a male of rape?
Yeah, that.
Okay. And is he saying that the woman that did that was the worst character?
Yeah, he just kind of quickly swept over it, like, she is the worst character in Shield Hero, and that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I think probably people don't want to be on record, like, talking too much about Shield Hero, because they'll be accused of, like, doubting rape survivors or something like that. Because I know some people were trying to use this anime to defend Vic or something like that. And so it became controversial. And they were saying, well, this anime is anti-Miku, everyone should boycott it. But hopefully he didn't get into much trouble for saying that.
Nah, I doubt it. It was, his answer was pretty vague, so I mean...
Yeah.
The only other thing I did was... there was this one panel with, like, a few of the other voice actors, so... Let's see, with Lisa Ortiz, Tara Sand, Johnny Young Bosch, Kara Edwards, and shoot, who was the last one? Guest listing. This picture.
Ellen's.
Huh?
I was just asking if there were other actors there as well.
Oh, yeah, I was just trying to bring up the guest listing. But at that panel was Deese Ortiz, Tara Platt, Tara Stan, Johnny Young Bosch, and Kava Edwards and Ellen Stern. And it seemed like a fun panel. I felt a few of the questions I was kind of sitting there like, I can't believe I'm in the same room as this.
Was it just people asking the same stuff about how do I become a voice actor?
There were a couple of those, and a couple of them were like, if something happened to happen to you tomorrow, who would you entrust your voice roles to?
Oh, that's kind of a...
That's kind of a dark question to ask. Yeah.
Yeah, and the whole room just kind of went, oh, that's something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they do have plans for this kind of stuff, like how, like, Frieza had to go through various different actors when the voice actor got sick.
Oh, Lydia Young?
Well, that was, like, the original actress, and then they moved over to, I think, Greg Ayers or Chris Ayers, and then he got like throat cancer and had to like send it off to some protege of his to do for the last few episodes of the Resurrection of Frieza arc on Super.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if he ever came back to the role or if somebody else is doing it now during the Paramount of Power arc. Maybe he's recovered enough to do it again. But, I mean, I guess Funimation does have plans for that kind of thing, but it's kind of like a rude question to ask somebody.
The only other questions I remember was, because Johnny Young Bosch was on Power Rangers, and I think it was Tara Sands was on the Ultraman anime, she tried asking the other actresses if they had done anything in Tokusatsu, and nobody else seemed to recognize the term because they were like, tofu? Tokis? Why are you asking about the Tokis? But they're kind of making a joke out of it.
Oh, there must be so few like toku jobs that they don't even recognize the term. Actors.
Yeah. The person eventually, like, someone summed it up going, have you done any jobs with giant robots? And they just said no.
Oh.
And there was a question of one person who was, he was asking Johnny and Bosch if, because I guess Sentai and Ultraman had come over to America, he was asking Bosch if he knew anything about Rider coming, and he was sort of asking the guy that he should message Toei to bring back Masked Rider and redo it with Kamen Rider Drive footage.
Yeah. Somehow and, I don't see that happening, but it's nice to ask,
I guess. Yeah. And Bosch was just kind of like... he didn't say it, but he was just like, why are you asking me this? Or he was saying, okay, yeah, I'll go message Toei. You go message Toei about that. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, that's, like, it's not like these actors are making decisions about what shows get licensed. Like, that's happening at, like, the level of, like, toy companies and, you know, filming studios and, like, is not some random guy at a con is just gonna ask for it and then it's gonna happen.
Yeah, Tara Sands even said after that voice actors are the last people to know about it, so they wouldn't have any input.
Well, I mean, like, they don't even know what their next role is going to be until they come in the office and they're throwing a script like, hey, you got to do this today.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think there's ever been a case of, like, a voice actor commissioning a show be made for them. Like, that just doesn't happen. Even with somebody that's, like, one of the top voice actors or whatever, that's not how the industry works.
Yeah.
Yeah, after that, I just went home, really. There wasn't anything else big on Sunday because it was all just kind of winding down.
Okay. So, did you have fun at the con overall?
Yeah, I did. And I'm still planning to go to 2020, the con next year.
So this year they had a samurai theme, is that right?
It was from the Shogunate, yeah. But honestly, it didn't really feel like the theme was even there. It was more like City Hunter, Code Geass, random not semi stuff.
Thing. Oh, I noticed that Code Geass is on Netflix, and I just watched the first 5 episodes of today. It's gotta be like Blu-ray footage because it looks a lot better than it did on like my old DVRWs of it that I found from like 2007 when it aired. I had like a clip of it in Death Note and then like Samurai Jack from like the Tom Fortunami.
Wait, I thought you didn't have Netflix anymore. I thought your mom like canceled the account. Like, oh, there's nothing there. I want to watch it.
She did, but I still have a few more days until it's out, so I'm like in the trouble.
Oh, gotcha.
But yeah, they just added it this month, I think. And but anyway, didn't you say that there was like a forum post where somebody was complaining that something went badly at some panel involving the samurai, where somebody was like, reenacting a suicide, and then the people in the audience were offended by it.
Well, I think it was the fact that like somebody was making fun of seppuku or something, and turning into a joke, and they were offended. And then I don't know if it's the same person with multiple accounts, or it's different people. But then he had that whole like flame war about AMVs and how whatever was shown at an AMV competition was offensive. And then they're like, oh, well, we demand that you do it this way. And it's like, no, because this way has worked for years and we're going to stick to it that way. And they're like, well, I don't want to be treated like a peon. I don't know. There's just the screen caps you showed of like those forum posts on Anime Boston where it's just like what one or two people that are like, or it's probably the same person that's arguing that if they were in charge of making the AMV competition, this is how they would do it because it would be less offensive or something.
And they were like, this event is still stinging to the people of Japan because don't you know that there's a plaque that says that we remember their sacrifice or something?
Didn't they bring up like Pearl Harbor or something? Like Pearl Harbor happened, what, 60, like long time ago. And
and the suicide happened in like the 1800s.
Yeah, like oh, it's still fresh on people's minds. No, it's not. They don't even know the what is it? That one massacre in China? Like they barely talk about it. They probably don't even talk about this in like you know in Japanese history class.
The rape of Nanjing.
Yeah, something like that.
That was like a Japanese atrocity that was in the World War II.
Probably don't even know about the 226 incident either. So.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think Abe kind of, he gets a lot of heat because he'll go to, like, the grave sites of Japanese soldiers from World War II. And so this stuff is still controversial in Japan, but, I mean, how many people at Anime Boston are actually Japanese and are involved in historical controversies?
And are offended over that.
Right.
Just the guy on Anime Boston forums that's making the biggest stink about it.
From what I could tell, it was not as stupid as, like, when Gavin McInnes gave a speech with, like, yellow eyes glasses or whatever to his eyes look slanted and then like simulated the beheading of a Japanese politician.
Oh my god!
Right before a Proud Boys riot in New York. I mean, I don't think it stops that for insensitivity towards Japanese history.
So, yeah, as I remember that first post, apparently, like, I didn't go to the panel, but apparently the person posting was saying, well, not only was he uneducated on the material, and he pronounced stuff bad, but they were claiming he took a sword and tried to, like, reference Seppuku, and the first person got all ticked off. And I can't go to that panel, or I can't go to a panel of that knowing this guy is behind it.
Then don't go! How hard is that? Just don't show up.
Offended by like a fake seppuku. When back then people had to actually like cut off the head of the guy next to them that was doing seppuku, and they had to like see his guts spill out. And it's like whatever this simulation was, it was mild compared to the actual suffering that people involved had to go through. And you're like living in like an air conditioned building in 2019. Like complaining that you saw something that made you mildly uncomfortable or something, you know. Like these people have it good, and they're, you know, like act like this was the worst thing that ever happened.
Fair point. Even your bird agrees. I hear him
calling
back.
Yeah, that's how angry they are about this conversation. The bird was seriously offended by this.
And I guess the panel had mentioned this thing called the Boshin War, and that's probably why the guy got his undies in a bunch, because he was, I'm not as versed about the war as I should be, but I guess there had been a lot of people in it who had done seppuku, and he was saying it was some mockery to an event that's fresh in people's minds, and because there's still a plaque for it. And
yeah, I didn't even know about any of this until like this person posted in the forums.
Yeah, I'd never heard of the guy who ran the panel or whatever. Maybe
or
the
historical of this war
idiot.
Or whatever. I didn't know about it.
Yeah, maybe the potion
we need the
Kenshin or something, but I don't know like the details of it either. I mean, I'm sure it's like various different feudal families of samurai.
Yeah.
So, do we have anything on Henry Boston, or should we move on to Avengers?
Oh, I was just going to clarify about that dumb AMV post.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
Where the person's main argument seemed to be that, well, not only was there an AMV about Grave of the Fireflies that was put in a contest, but there was a comedy of some character seeing his mom getting moved, and that second one offended me more.
Oh.
That was basically it.
I'm pretty sure Grave of the Fireflies has been in parody and AMVs for a number of years. And it ain't the first time. It ain't its first rodeo. So, you know, deal with it.
That's a sad movie. But, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what the AMV is. I don't know what it's called. They just said it's a Grave of the Fireflies AMV. Well, how many of those were there at this thing? I don't know. So I couldn't have no clue what this guy's talking about.
I'm sure everybody's seen
me neither.
I thought AMVs were dead at cons. Like, they don't even really do like competitions. It's very rare that big cons do AMVs. Like, so AWA still does theirs. I think Animazement might have dwindled down significantly on AMVs. And I guess Anime Boston still does theirs. I think Anime North probably. It's a handful of conventions that still do AMVs to this day. So like Anime Week in Atlanta, they have a 24-hour, the entire con, it's a 24-hour AMV like room, basically. And so like that's kind of like their main con that like still like, you know, pushes for AMVs. Like, I don't even think AutoCon still does it. I don't know. So
I remember when I went to Comic Cosse, speaking of like Pearl Harbor. Harbor versus in Los Angeles a few years ago, and they had Stan Lee supposedly in some room. I was like trying to find where he was, and I ended up at some AMV contest instead at the room where he was supposed to be. So I never got to see the guy. Unfortunately, now he's dead.
Yeah.
I never going to see the guy.
Yeah.
But they had an AMV contest at like a comic convention. Although I guess Kamikaze, it, you know, the name is sort of invokes Japan, but it was basically not an anime comic, like a comic. You know, even at comic cons, there's a lot of anime stuff. So. I guess there are still cons that do these AMV things, but overall, I think AMV was more like early YouTube. Like that was when it was really big. Well, now YouTube is more about like reaction videos and unboxings, crap like that.
Yeah, well, the thing is, AMVs have been around in anime fandom since, like, the 80s. And, you know, people have always done them, but they've done it, like, you know, with linear editing, basically, where they take two VCRs and do all the timing. And, like, the person with, like, the best skill would be the one that could actually, like, go to the scene and then stop it or play it right at the same time and copy it, like, perfectly. And that would take, like, hours and hours to do. So they're very limited on what they could do. And now with everything digital, you can be as precise as possible, or even add graphics or whatever.
Yeah, it reminds me of James Earl talking about like how he had to know exactly like how to time when he's like taping stuff. Because like, a VCR can have like a little lag. And so you have to like know just how to copy like from one tape to another tape and not miss anything. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it was pretty tough to do that back in the day, but people would make AMVs and, like, even a Bridge series, I think, were made in, like, the 80s and 90s, non-analog media. Like, there was some Ranma thing that Steve was trying to get us to watch, I think, and I don't think I watched it, but it was, like, some god-awful 90s of Bridge series or something.
Yeah, it was not good. I think I sat through maybe 10 minutes of it, and I couldn't understand half of the audio. And I was like, this is dumb as hell. And I was like, no. Yeah. So.
Okay, so I guess we can move into Avengers now if you want.
Yeah, sure.
I'm done with convention talk. You can talk about your superheroes now.
Okay, cool.
So Zanuck, you have not seen Captain Marvel, right? So I guess I can briefly talk about that before
I get to. If you feel led to talk about Captain Marvel, you can't. Does it have any tie-in to the Avengers Endgame movie? Because I felt like it really didn't.
Yeah, I'll get to that. It's not the most crucial movie to watch, I would say, of Marvel movies. I felt like it was kind of. What people criticize is the Star Wars prequels for, which is like it's providing trivial details about things that you've already seen in other movies, like explaining how this minor detail got to be that way, like Nick Fury's eye, why does he have an eye patch? Oh, well, it's because Captain Marvel's cat pawed him in the face. Okay, yeah, that's really epic. You know, the original way Nick Fury got his eye patch in the 1960s comics was War Wound fighting the Nazis with the Howling Commandos, right? But now it's 2019, so we've got to have like a cutesy accident involving a pet pawing him in the face.
Is that what really happened in that movie?
Yes.
Oh my god, no, I'm not seeing Captain Marvel. Screw that.
And everybody was like, this cat can defeat Thanos. It's the most badass motherfucker to ever exist.
Oh my god.
There are actually people saying this kind of stuff about Captain Marvel.
On Twitter though, right?
Yes.
Of course, that's their main voice to say the dumbest crap. Yeah.
But yeah. And so it has like where was Phil Coulson in the 1990s? Oh, he was working with Nick Fury as a buddy cop, and they were hanging out in the Blockbuster parking lot looking for space alien. And so, you know, you have all these, like, callbacks to 90s culture. Oh, remember VHS? Remember
Blockbuster?
Right.
Remember Pogs? I don't see. This is like I was like, I mean, before you told me this, I was like, all right, I'll probably watch Captain Marvel, like, you know, eventually in the future. And now you're telling me this, it's like, why would I want to watch this movie?
It's not like it's a terrible movie or anything, but it is on that to like see Avengers. You don't really need to see it. So basically, I can't even explain the plot, but she's this Air Force pilot, and somehow she's taken to the planet of the Kree. They like mess with her genes and her memories. And so it's all like flashing all around in this confusing way of like the past and the present. She doesn't know who she is, and fighting the Skrulls, which are these green aliens that can shapeshift. But then it turns out that the Kree are these sort of evil imperialists that are oppressing the Skrulls. And so she has to turn on the Kree and fight them. And she's accompanied by Samuel L. Jackson. They have to, like, break into a base, steal some fucking secret something or other. It's not that important. But then at the end, she flies off into space. And then the credits roll. And then you have, like, the mid-credit scene, which is the Avengers, and it's like how Ant-Man had like a minute of Captain America Civil War during the credits. This has a minute of Endgame, and so it's the part where she's meeting with Thor, and she's like, I like this woman, and supposedly she filmed this without knowing what the other people were saying or something like this. She didn't know the script. And so she was like complaining about this on the Tonight Show with Stephen Colbert or something.
Oh gosh.
They were treating me badly because I was complaining. They didn't trust me to not leak the details about it to the internet. So offensive. And all this stuff about the secrecy of the Marvel and how airtight they are about not having stuff leak. But ultimately, this minute of footage is not that important. Because you're just going to see it in the next movie anyway.
Yeah, like a month later.
Right, and I saw it like a week later. Cause I waited till like kind of last week to see this. And it was still extremely crowded, like both movies. They were pretty much full, except for like the first couple rows that were way down.
Yeah.
So I had to sit at like the first row above like the railing, you know. And then some more credits roll, and they show the cat climbing around on Nick Fury's desk for like a minute, and it's like coughing, slowly coughing. It's like, oh, it's gonna half up a hairball, so cute. And then it coughs up the cosmic cube, or the tesseract, as they call it, these movies. And so that's supposed to explain why the tesseract was in S.H.I.E.L.D. custody, because this cat had eaten it and spat it out.
What the fuck? Like,
yeah. So that's that movie.
I will say this. I don't know about you, but I certainly cheered when Thor was kicking the crap out of Captain Marvel at the end of the Endgame. Like, I was just kind of secretly like, yes, just please, just get rid of her, Thanos.
Yeah. So now we can get into Endgame here. I had to go to the bathroom before I went to Endgame. And so Thanos was gardening. I was like, okay, this is not going to be a real important scene, is it? He's just like cooking some food. This is a good time to go to the bathroom real quick. And when I come back on the screen, 5 years later, and wait, what? And I asked him, like, what happened? What did I miss? And she's like, oh, Thor killed Thanos.
Yeah, so, no, I was talking to my buddy Eric about it, because basically, like, I think in this the comics or something, like, they made a thing where, like, Thor didn't behead Thanos, and they kind of give him crap about it, but now they, like, kind of, like, in this movie, he goes and you know, beheads Thanos or whatever, as a reference to that. Yeah, because basically, like, in the garden area, you know, they find Thanos, and he basically, like, destroys the Infinity Stones. So then no one else can use them.
Yeah.
And so then, like, they're pissed because they can't reverse what he's done. So then, and then Thor just loses it and beheads him.
Right.
I made a comment on the chat last night. I was like, what's with Disney making, like, these, like, awesome, you know, burly men fat slobs? Like, you've got Thor that's, like, it's got a beer gut. And as Tony Stark called him, like, he called him a Big Lebowski in the movie. But then also the fact you got, like, the Lando Calrissian in Star Wars is just this fat tub of, like, lard or whatever in the cockpit going, rah, 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 rah. Like, he's even got a fat laugh with him, too. Like, am I going to imagine episode 9 is just Lando trying to, like, get his fat ass in the Millennium Falcon chair for 2.5 hours? Because that is worth the money.
In that case, it might be just that the actor got old and fat. But with Thor, you know that case. There was, like, a trailer for some other movie that Thor's actor was in before the movie played. And he looked, like, completely different from this movie. You know, he didn't have the long beard and the big belly and all that stuff.
Okay.
I'm sure they just put, like, a prosthetic tummy on him or something to make it look
that's cool. Yeah, that's what I thought, too. I was like, there's no way he, like, completely, like, gained beer gut in, you know, like, amount of time that, you know, making this movie. It had to be in the prosthetic gut or whatever.
He's not a method actor like Christian Bale, like, lose or gain a ton of weight for each role, like, for Batman or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't think that this guy does that. I think he pretty much just shows up and reads what he's set to read. But he does a good job, and I'm glad he's, like, mm-hmm. the one Avenger that's still going to be around after this.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end, spoiler alert, we're going to spoil the movie here. They have, like, Tony Stark and Steve Rogers written off in pretty definitive ways.
I gotta admit that, like, they both got written off really well. I really like how they ended the movie with Captain America, which he basically retires. And he decided to go ahead.
He goes back in time and relives his, like, I mean, this is something that Captain America, I guess he's always wanted to do, right? Because he's always felt like being present.
Yeah.
And he gets to go back to, and he gets to, like, marry Peggy and everything, I assume.
Yeah, he gets to marry Agent Carter and grow old with her and live a life with her that he's always dreamed. And, you know, the thing is, it's like, you know, they were both basically made for each other, but, you know, fate stepped in and, you know, Red Hood, or Red Skull took that from them. And then now he has a chance to kind of live that life. Cause he figured, like, yeah, he took care of the Infinity Stones, but he's just like, you know what? I decided to live the life I wanted. And, and then, what was it? He gave the shield to the Falcon guy, right? So he's going to be the new Captain America.
Yes, and the Falcon, like, looks over at Bucky, like, is it okay if I do this? And then Bucky's like, yeah, go ahead.
And yeah, because it's always been passed down to the Bucky, because Bucky became, like, the next Captain America.
Well, in the comics, they actually had, like, both of them as Captain America.
Oh, okay.
So they've done both, but, yeah.
What's to say that they won't do something with the new Captain America, then Bucky becomes Captain America?
Right, that could happen.
Yeah. And I honestly think that the new Iron Man is going to be Tony Stark's daughter. Like, it makes sense.
Yes, because they had a little girl become Iron Man.
Yeah. So.
And they had his wife in the suit at one point during the movie, like during the final battle where everybody was showing up and fighting.
Yeah, Pepper Potts was fighting in the final battle. Supposedly they had that, like, girl power scene, but apparently I think that's a throwback to, like, a comic they did with all the female Marvel characters. So they're trying to mimic that image is what I understood.
Yeah, I don't know about this. About Thanos.
That, I mean, that's what I heard. So that was kind of like a drawback to that certain image.
They had, like, this part where Captain Marvel was fighting Thanos, I think. then all the other ones showed up behind her, like Gamora and Valkyrie and all those people were there.
Yeah.
So, could you explain something to me about Gamora? Like, Thanos sacrifices Gamora with the... to get the soul gem in Infinity War, right? He throws her off the cliff because he has to, like, sacrifice someone he loves. And so they do that again in this movie with the Avengers have to get all the gems. And so Hawkeye and
Black Widow
are there with the Red Skull on that alien planet, and they don't explain why the Red Skull is on an alien.
Yeah, they haven't bothered to explain that yet, so...
But he's there, and he has the gem for some reason. And he's like, you must sacrifice the other one in order to get the gem. And, okay, I don't know why they don't like tackle the Red Skull. He doesn't have any superpowers. He's just a Nazi that wears a skull on his head. But they fucking kill off the Black Widow. They like she falls off this cliff and dies. And she doesn't get a wish back to life with the Dragon Balls.
Well, they're talking about... Okay, well, go to your question, because I think I might know what you're about to ask.
Well, and then Gamora is, like, she's still in the movie. And, like, I guess she's back with the Guardians in the bit and everything. Maybe because they only killed off, like, the future version of her, and then the past version of her continues to survive because the timeline ends up going differently or something. I don't know.
Okay.
Like the past version of her stays with Thanos instead of joining the Guardians, and then she turns on Thanos during the final battle. Is that right? And then she joins the Guardians.
Okay. So my buddy Eric brought this up to me. We're basically like, for the Soul Stone, you have to sacrifice someone that you love.
Yes.
And he brought up the question about, like, okay, so Black Widow, like, Hawkeye didn't sacrifice her. She sacrificed herself. So, well, that still count? But I guess it did because he got the Soul Stone.
And he's married to another woman, too. So
Hawkeye, yeah, he's got a family to raise. So she kind of, you know, factor that in. Because they're both like... I honestly thought that scene was just stupid because they're just fighting. And I was just like, gosh, one of you guys just die so we can get this movie going. Mm-hmm. And then she wound up, you know, sacrificing herself, and then they wound up getting the Soul Stone. But I guess maybe it works the same way where, like, because it sounds like the ultimatum is, like, you have to throw someone you love off that cliff, and, you know, but you can't do, like, a self-sacrifice. But I guess, like, he never explained it, so then it would still technically count.
But they were both trying to self-sacrifice, and then that's what happened.
Yeah, exactly. So...
Like, he doesn't, like, throw her off the cliff. He's, like, dangling her off the cliff with his hand. And she, like, lets go.
They're trying to both prevent each other from committing suicide.
Yeah.
For the other one. And...
Yeah.
So that was something he brought up to me, and I was like, well... And I'm just thinking, well, Red Skull never explained that, like, you couldn't do that. And it worked, so therefore you can do that. Alright, so... But that also makes sense as you brought up a Gamora, because, like, Star-Lord saw Gamora in the battlefield, and he was about to, like, you know, get, you know, like, hug her or whatever, and she got, like, really offended. And I was just like, why, you know, like, I thought she liked him or something, and then I just realized, this is not the same Gamora. This is the, right. This is the past Gamora. She doesn't know how, Star-Lord feels about her. Because he hadn't seen her since, you know, Thanos sacrificed future her, and he's only seen past one. So he's got to basically start all over again with Gamora, which, you know, like, I'm sure it'll be fine.
This will probably be the romantic conflict. Guardians of the Galaxy 3 will be like him trying to win her back over, stuff like that. Will be brought up, I'm sure.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
But they have... they have this this part where they're all, like, traveling... Stones, and Steve goes back and sees Peggy, and he's like looking at her through the window wistfully and thinking, like, oh, wouldn't it be nice if I could be with her? And then they Nebula and War Machine go to get the stone from Star-Lord, and he's like dancing around on the planet like he is at the start of Guardians 1.
Yeah,
and they're like, oh, so he's an idiot. And, yeah, pretty much. And then they just knock him out while he's like doing his thing with his Walkman in his ears. And they take the stone, and then but then Thanos is there with the Nebula of the past, the Gamora of the past, and then something happens, and I don't really get it. They like get some chip out of Nebula's head or something, and they like switch it out, or I don't know what all this was about. Do you remember this part?
Yeah, well, they were trying to, because there's two Nebulas, and they're going through future Nebula's history, and to see, Thanos, like, his goal for what he wants with the soul, with the stones. And then they, so past Nebula, like, is proving her allegiance by basically wearing the gold metal piece stripe thing on her forehead. And, basically, like, oh, I'm going to blend in, and, you know, they won't know the difference or whatever. And then, you know, future Nebula, shows up and they save the day or whatever. So that was pretty much it.
Okay, and so does, like, future Nebula turn Gamora against Thanos or something like this? Like, is that why Gamora turns on Thanos? Because, I mean... Like, he raises her and everything, so she has some sort of, like, sentimental...
Well, no, like, basically, like, she finds out, like, what Thanos did to Gamora to get the Soul Stone. Because that's all in the future, what he's got to do.
She knows that he kills her later.
Yeah, well, that's kind of implied, basically, why she would switch sides. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Oh, man, I will say this: I did like the scene where they go back to the 70s to get the Tesseract cube, because they botched up the they botched up getting it from the first Avengers movie, and then Loki takes the cube and goes somewhere with it. So I think there've been like articles and like, oh, where did Toki take the cube at? And maybe that just sets it up for the second movie of Thor 2. I don't know, but. But anyway, so they go back to the 70s where the other Tesseract cube is, or where it's been basically this whole time. And then, of course, Tony meets his father, and that was actually a pretty touching moment. I like that. Stan Lee looks like a shady porn director in the car that just says, "Love and peace, man." So he had his cameo, his post-death cameo in the movie.
There is, like, a famous image of Stan Lee from the 70s, like on a couch, like half naked or something like that, and he was like,
"That was his pose for Playboy,
right?"
Yeah.
So I think that was a little reference to that. Probably the best part of Captain Marvel was the start of it. They had the logo of Marvel showing up, and it's got the music going, dun, 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 and they've got all the different Stan Lee cameos showing up all over the letters. The years, and then it says like dedicated to Stan, and so I thought that was a nice moment. And Stan does appear in Captain Marvel, so. But Avengers is supposed to be the final appearance of Stan Lee in one of these movies, like he did the film for Spider-Man.
Yeah, I figured like it maybe his final line would have been like saying Excelsior in the car or something.
Yeah,
kind of keep it real, but oh well. I will say this, like, so when, like, you know, everyone shows up after they've been wished back, and, like, you got Black Panther that, like, it reminds me of this YouTube guy, of this, like, black dude. I think he's got, like, autism or something, but he does commentary on football games, and so, like, Black Panther ran, like, you know, the Iron Man Thanos glove, or Power Stone glove, like, you know, 300 yards, and did all these, like, you know, dodging and juke moves or whatever. With the glove, and it just reminded me of this one guy. I have to like describe it, and maybe I might play it. Where basically this guy like takes a video of like one of the running backs for the Seahawks, and he's just like basically like, you know, oh shit, you can't get past me, get out of the way, and then like he's running down, he's going, and then he gets the touchdown, and he's like, hold my dick. He's like, this running back, he put the team on his back, you know, that's what I'm saying, you know, when he put the team on his back. You know, this man right here, you know, he ain't take shit nobody. You know, that's how you do it. That's how you win football. I have to, like, put a clip of that in this video so people can understand where I'm coming from on this. But it was just kind of like, he was running, and like my brother was with me, so then like, you know, I just see Black Panther running with the thing like he's a running back or whatever, and I'm just thinking, oh my dick.
Yeah.
So yeah, Black Panther shows up, like, and did a whole my dick move.
And everything, right behind him. And they're all fighting Thanos. And then other time travel segments, they had like Thor went back to the period of Thor 2, and he meets his mother, and he's like drunk and fat and everything in Asgard.
Yeah, and, I like how they're like
with whether he can change the timeline to save her or something.
Yeah, and she's just like, nah, don't bother. And Natalie Portman had that brief role where she basically, she said nothing, and she got knocked out by Rocket, and then that was it.
Right. She was at the red carpet premiere for the movie, and so people were like, is she in it? We didn't know she was going to be in it. We thought she was written out. She was there for like 5 seconds.
Yeah, she was literally in it for like a minute of this movie, basically just walking around or waking up on like a bed or something, and that was it.
Yeah, there's one part where Thor is like talking about her. And he's, like, complaining about how she dumped him or something like that. You know, it's when he's, like, getting his drunken speech with the Avengers. And he has to, like, explain about the, like, the red gem or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's, like, rambling about it. And then Thor is, like, a mess in this movie. He's become, like, an alcoholic and he's hanging out with the rock guy and
from Thor Ragnarok, yeah.
Yeah. But,
and then he gets on to kids like who basically like, you know, are trolling on Fortnite.
Yeah, he's just hanging out with the rock guy and the monster on the couch and they're like playing Fortnite.
Yeah.
And the rock monster is like so polite. And he's just like, "Hello, mate, I'm gonna play Fortnite with you." And then I guess the other guy on the other end must be real rude because they don't like show what the other guy is saying.
Yeah.
But then Thor just like takes the headset and starts like threatening the guy.
Yeah, like, it was like a kid or something.
Thunder and I will smite you if you ever give shit to my companion again.
it's probably the kid that's been trolling Ghost on the Ghost show. I'm surprised, like, Thor like, isn't grabbing the mic. He's like, "Where are your parents? Let me talk to your parents."
No, Asho. Where are the parents?
Yeah.
Doing the horizontal mambo with Ethnic Minority and Applebee's?
No, have you heard any of the Radio Graffitis for, like, for this, no, like, there's this kid trolling Thor, not Thor, but a Ghost now. And, like, Ghost just keeps asking, like, "Where are your parents? It's 3 a.m, what are you doing up making phone calls or something?"
Yeah, Ghost broadcasts like 6-hour shows now.
Yeah, he threatened not to do a troll show after like what happened on Radio Graffiti Friday night, and then he still does the troll show. Yeah. And Lightning Note just posted up a video of like basically Radio Graffiti of that, so I'm gonna have to listen to that eventually. So
I have to click out on that clip you mentioned earlier. Ghost plays Yu-Gi-Oh! I didn't see that yet.
Yeah, he claims that he's got an awesome Yu-Gi-Oh! Card deck, and he's like, "I will wipe the floor with anybody." And he says that he was like, "Oh, I'm going to go get my deck." Well, no, never mind. I'm not even going to bother. But you just don't mess with me in Yu-Gi-Oh! I'm the king of that game. And I'm like, wait, what?
Ghost, he's the king of games.
Gosh.
Yeah, this guy used to constantly like yell at autists for playing video games or watching anime or whatever. And now he's like bought a gaming PC. And he's bragging about his mad Yu-Gi-Oh! Skills.
Oh, what a man.
People that he banned from the inner circle when he discovered that they watched Tsunami on the Baloney Network stream or whatever. Yeah, because he thinks Tsunami is like hardworking type.
I don't know the details about that, so.
Yeah, I mean, he's just ridiculous. But that's how Ghost is. So I guess, what were the other time travels? That kind of was like, The bulk of the movie was the part where they were all like each character had their own kind of like final segment where they got to kind of go back and revisit some part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe from an earlier movie.
Yeah,
and I thought that was a really good way to tie together, you know, people had to see 20 or 30 movies all leading up to this. I don't know how many there are.
Well,
but like 3 a year for 10 years, basically. And,
yeah.
And so this has like callbacks to everything. And, well, also everything, I guess, like Captain Marvel. Like, you know, all the big moments, of time, like they go back to the New York City and they see like the Hulk smashing the monsters around and stuff, which was like one of the most memorable moments in Avengers where the Hulk is like hitting Loki all around, like as a ragdoll and stuff. Like he's doing that to the, Chitauri aliens in New York and everything. And like,
yeah. No, what was it? He basically, Captain America fights himself. And then and then he makes that comment, is just like, he looks at it's like himself on the ground knocked down. He's just like, yep, that's America's ass right there. And just walks off.
Yeah.
I like the fact that like he gets on the elevator with all the Hydra guys from S.H.I.E.L.D. and they're like, give us the case. He's just like, or he's trying to get it from him. He's like, Hail Hydra. And that's all it takes is just to say Hail Hydra. And he gets what he wants. And I'm just like, is that organization? Well, no wonder it fell apart. Because if all it takes for you to initiate it is just to say Hail Hydra, then like, anybody can really join.
Yeah, I guess the thought was that they were like kind of undercover at that point, the Hydra guys, and they were conveying to one another, like, if they were Hydra, they would, you know, say this to one another. But yeah, I saw Ken Penders, the Sonic guy, on Twitter was saying that this scene was supposed to be a jab at Nick Spencer, who was writing the Captain America comics when they revealed that Captain America was a Hydra agent. And I don't think that's the case. I think this was just that was what he needed to do for that section of the movie to try to get the, you know, the jam and everything.
Yeah.
So I don't think that was necessarily what was going on there. I'm sure whatever happened in that comic, I didn't read it, but I'm sure it was reversed and that Captain America was acting like Hydra or something, just like he wasn't. Or, you know, like, there's no way Captain America was actually a Hydra agent for 70 years or whatever. People were taking that so literally and acting like, this is proof Marvel Comics supports fascism. They're so tone deaf. How could they do this?
Oh, okay.
This was like a big controversy a year or two ago.
Yeah, I remember that.
And they were
that.
Like, fascism is rising in America, and they thought this was a good time to do this. And all the hysterical.
Yeah, because they were promoting that Hydra comic, and then people were like, this is promoting Nazism and fascism or whatever. And it's just like, it's a freaking comic book. Like, you know, come on.
Yeah. I remember the channel, there was a guy, he's like, very left-wing guy. He would talk about things like going to a polyamory gathering or something, and then he would come back and he would be like, yeah, these guys, they're kind of mentally ill. And it was just like a bunch of like weird people like having an orgy or whatever. And he was like, oh, I had to go there to be like rich. And then he would come back, you know, I probably should get a vasectomy sometime. And he would just always have these weird, that, just like, he would say, my mom says I should be more like Donald Trump and I should grab women by the pussy. What's the deal with these people?
Jeez.
but this guy, you know, so he's not exactly, but, he was like saying, you know, these liberals who are upset about this comic book, they just don't get it at all. Like, obviously, this is just a story that's going somewhere, and this is not actually meant to promote fascism. Like, they're just completely tone deaf in how they're creating the story. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I'm sure there are people who felt that same way about this scene. Seeing America's iconic Captain America say, Hail Hydra, this was Marvel secretly signaling that they're fascists and Nazis.
Oh my god.
I haven't seen that reaction to this movie, but I'm sure that there are people who react that way.
I mean, if you bother to do any digging on Twitter, you'll probably find it.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I was looking up when I was watching. Okay. are people going to say Aquaman is a fascist because it's like a monarch of a kingdom and there's not democratic election? He's a strongman dictator or something. And yeah, I did find quite a few people saying like Aquaman is a fascist. DC promotes fascism because Aquaman, he's this dictator of the seas. Rules with an iron fist. All this stuff. So, I mean, people will say that about it. And Aquaman, by the way, is a pretty good movie.
Okay. I'm glad to hear that. Because I haven't seen it. I don't know. I guess we're just kind of hitting the high points of Avengers Endgame because I don't want to, you know, we're just kind of hitting up our favorite parts of that movie or the parts right. that stuck out. I mean, like, basically it was kind of like, you know, they go like 5 years. Well, I mean, they happen to have like a bit of an LGBT moment where like they're having a support group for people trying to like cope with like how there's half the people on the planet or whatever. And Steve Rogers is like, you know, part of that, like this group or whatever. And then like there's one dude who's just like, yeah, I went on a date. And then he just kept referring to his date as a him. And I was like, maybe he's talking about his friend. No, this guy's gay. Oh, all right.
Yeah, that I remember seeing like in advance of.
You kind of cut out there for a sec.
Yeah, there were people on like a top Twitter moment, and it was gay people who were. This is not what we wanted here. We wanted the whole reputation. And instead they just threw us this little bone. And what they really should have done was make one of the Avengers gay. And this was just such an unimportant character. This is not what we need. And so. Well,
at first I thought it was Mark Ruffalo. Like, I thought it was, Bruce Banner. I was just like, I didn't know he was gay now. And then I think it was one of his brothers, but it wasn't because the Hulk in this, it's Mark Ruffalo on a Hulk body basically, which is it was kind of weird to look at first because he's got like in these big Frank's glasses. He's just like, I accept Hulk now, and Hulk is who I really am instead of me trying to fight him. And then he's like, you know, taking selfies with kids or whatever, and he's like, oh, dap, haha, I'm cool with the kids and all this stuff.
Yeah, and Ant-Man was there. Get them to take a picture with him. And they were like, no, we don't want a picture with Ant-Man. Because everybody thinks Ant-Man has been dead for 5 years. And he's like ex-criminal that's only like really been involved in like 2 or 3 adventures or something.
Yeah.
So he's just not popular. And and everybody wants to take pictures with the Hulk instead. But yeah, this is something in comics where the Hulk, at various points would get the intelligence of Bruce Banner and, try to, make the world a better place or something. I read the Peter David, like the best Hulk run, not too long ago, and, the Hulk, like, takes over this, they call it like a think tank, and, he's intervening like Iraq and like overthrowing dictators and saving the rainforest and all this very like early 90s political stuff. And he has Banner's brain and thinks he's gonna save the world and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean I guess they're kind of back to that because back then the Hulk, he had on like a shirt and pants and everything. He was, trying to be much more sophisticated. And like in this, the Hulk does not talk like Hulk mad, Hulk smash. He talks in full sentences. Like he's basically Banner. And, this was like, kind of following up on the last movie where the Hulk had this, personality, conflict where his, Banner herself couldn't change into the Hulk because the Hulk lost a battle, so he, I guess, felt too ashamed to come out or something. He said something like, oh, I'm mad all the time or something, and that's how I can trigger the change. Or I remember him saying that in one of the movies. So over time, they've gradually kind of explored, like, well, how does he become a whole Tatsuya? So I guess he's, like, finally fully integrated his personalities together and just, you know, he's just the Hulk all the time. And so that makes him strong enough that he can have the Infinity Gauntlet on his hand and do the snap. But even doing that, he still burns up, like, half of his body. And he gets, like, very brutalized by that. And even after having done that, it's like you think, okay, well, he just brought everybody back. He reversed the snap by Thanos. And so now the movie's over, right? And then Thanos comes in, and boom, the whole building, Avengers headquarters explodes. And then there's a big hour-long battle. And then Iron Man ends up getting the gauntlet and doing the snap, and it kills him. So that's the big, like, tragic ending of the movie there. It's that Tony Stark is dead at the end of the movie. Spoiler alert. And they have, like, his funeral and everything. I thought they were going to show Stan there, but they didn't. But they have, like, all the superheroes are there and everything. And it sort of seems very final, where which I thought they would leave some way where Disney can bring back these guys, you know, especially Captain America, who's supposedly leaving. Mm-hmm. I thought they would leave, like, some opening where they can pay these guys $100 billion and say, please come back, we want to keep making movies with you. But I guess they really, really wanted out. They got written out in ways where I just can't see them coming back.
We kind of predicted that, like, you know, Iron Man would, you know, probably die in this movie, and that didn't surprise me because he was the one that kind of, you know, Robert Downey Jr. kind of kicked off this whole Marvel thing.
Yeah.
And that was back in 2008, I think.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's had a good run as Iron Man for like 11 years, so.
Yeah. I was a freshman in high school when Iron Man came out, and people at school were, like, excited about it, and people who wouldn't normally care about a superhero movie. And so that movie was, like, a phenomenon, and it jump-started this whole thing. And it's amazing how long they've kept it going, kept people watching these things. They're really so similar, but they keep finding ways to twist on it and keep it interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And all of them are entertaining on a popcorn movie level. There's not really any of these movies where you're going to, like, fall asleep, I think. So, yeah, I think that them killing off Iron Man, that was pretty bold. But I'm pretty sure Downey Jr. has wanted to be out. So, like, I think ever since Age of Ultron, Avengers 2, he's been saying, this is going to be my last one.
You know, yeah. Like, well, now it's finally is after, you know, two more Avengers movies.
Yeah.
And
Civil War he was in. Iron Man was in Spider-Man. So he's been popping up all over the place.
Yeah.
He's probably in like 10 movies or something. And I'm sure he's tired of that role, but he was still doing a real good job in this movie. I mean, he's just a great actor, so.
Yeah.
The only one in here that really could appear again, I mean, like, he's a girl even an Avenger.
I didn't even catch that. You cut out for a sec.
Yeah. So, if for Avengers who might appear, they do it.
Oh my gosh.
I guess we could get it. You can't hear me.
Well, you keep talking, and then you eventually cut out, so like, I can't hear what you're about to say. Like, anyways.
Okay. Maybe I can switch to my phone or something.
Oh.
I have to.
Are you on, like, Wi-Fi or something?
Yes.
Okay.
Is it still cutting out?
Did you get it off Wi-Fi?
No. Is it still having problems? Do I need
It's still kind of, like, touchy, but, like, for the most part, I've been hearing you, and you're like, oh, like, what if they got, and then you just, like, cut out for, like, a second or two, and then you come back.
Okay. Well, so, who do you think could be in the next event if they do another one?
Well, it's, the ones I can think of would be, man, I mean, in terms of, Are you talking about, like, villains in the next Avengers movie?
No, like, they, well, sure, but, I mean, I was thinking the heroes, you know, because so many of them died.
I mean,
they're going to have the Black Captain America.
Yeah, well, it's Black Captain America, I think it's going to be, I would imagine there might be, like, a time skip. So then, like, Tony Stark's daughter becomes the new Iron Man. And then, Spider-Man can be finally be an Avenger now, because he was an Avenger at some point. And I guess, like, well, Thor's in space. He joined the Guardians of the Galaxy, so it's probably going to be, like, you know, the new Iron Man, which is going to be Tony Stark's daughter, Black Captain America, Hulk, and Spider-Man. That's my guess for the next Avengers movie, but I have no idea who they might fight.
Yeah. So Hawkeye, I guess, could be there. I don't know anybody even. He was not even in Avengers 3. He's kind of like one of the more minor Avengers. And maybe he'll just want to hang out after seeing that. But I think that probably. And maybe Captain Marvel. I don't know.
Yeah, Captain Marvel too, maybe. Well, unless she's still out, like, being a space police person.
Right. They gave her a haircut and jokes about.
Yeah, I like how Rocket made fun of her haircut. He's like, oh, well, next time we see you, you're going to have another hairstyle or something.
Yeah.
I just don't like, when she shows up, she just looks like she's the most moodiest, pissed off woman. Like, I don't know, like, my buddy Eric was just kind of like, she just looks so bland, like, blah, like she's there. Like, there's really, that's like, the no problem. Kind of, like, personality to her.
That's the problem I have with her movies. She's got the pissed-off feminist look on her face.
Yeah.
She's just kind of, like, pouty, like, I hate the...
Exactly, face. Yeah.
And so she sometimes will sort of smile, but even when she smiles, sort of, the patriarchy is making me put her on this face.
It's a forced smile, basically, yeah.
Yes. I know there are women who say, like, oh, these men, they always want us to smile and be happy. You know, like, this is a common, like, feminist complaint, is they want women to just be these smiling secretaries that just greet everybody and put on a fake smile for capitalism and the patriarchy.
Mm.
You know, but I definitely get that impression from Brie Larson, just from some of the stuff she said during the interview to her.
Yeah, that's why, and you wonder why, like, I was rooting for Thanos when he was beating the crap out of her. Like, it's just like, look, I don't want to hate Captain Marvel or Brie Larson, but, you know, the stuff that she's saying, excuse me, I mean, I ain't that impressed with her right now. So, all I'm going to say, so.
It didn't help when she said something like, we don't want white males reviewing this. This is a movie for young women of who are transgendered, lesbian, or queer. Like, okay, you can say that, but, like, you know, white males are basically one of the core comic-buying demographics. So when Marvel tries to do things like kills off, you know, Iron Man and makes, like, a 5-year-old black girl, they did a while ago, like, a lot of people who buy those comic books are buying them as, like, sort of power fantasy or something. And they're, like, imagining themselves as Iron Man. And they can't imagine themselves as, like, a 5-year-old black girl or whatever, so they stop buying. And so then Marvel, like, lashes out and says, oh, these comic book buyers, they just don't appreciate our diversity having to go back to original characters, and we don't want to get rid of them.
Oh my gosh, you're cutting out so much.
Okay.
Just get off Wi-Fi and finish your thing, and then we can probably end it from here.
Okay. So, I think we've pretty much covered Avengers. I guess we can just kind of move into closing remarks if you have anything.
If we can make it brief, because I got to get up early for work in the morning. I know in our last recording, I failed to mention two great manga artists that passed away recently. Monkey Punch and Kazuo Koike, RIP to them. Because they passed away, like, very close to each other.
Yeah. The creator of Lupin, that was pretty sad. I guess he was maybe he was still doing Lupin manga from time to time. Right. To tie in with movies and stuff.
Or he had some sort of involvement with it.
Yeah. So I guess the last thing we'll cover for closing remarks, I'll mention the new Sonic movie that's getting all this negative reception. So the trailer came out and people were saying, oh, it looks like the Easter Bunny movie, Hop, and they were criticizing the design of Sonic and saying, like, he doesn't look like Sonic. And so they said they were going to redesign it. But I found here Chris Chan's response to Sonic movie.
Oh, boy.
Huey Farms. The Sonic 2013 fan movie is way better. Heed our words, Paramount Pix, Sonic movie, and Sega, please. Top 10 things you missed in the Sonic movie trailer. It's a link to Watch Mojo video. Then another tweet from him. It says, listen to the dude on Watch Mojo. He agrees with me and everyone else about the movie. Delay it a few months and redo the whole thing. And I guess Chris Chan is not too pleased by this. And then the caption from these guys says that the Sonic movie can't even see the movie, because can't even see Chris's tweet, because Chris has a private account. So I don't even know how he intends to influence them when they're not following him. And then he says, I've seen my fair share of live action from animated flicks. They usually don't work. Even the crew of Sonic the Hedgehog movie admit they purposely want to mess this up. I don't think they admitted that. And yes, the two elephants in the room of this great misinterpretation of Sonic himself, the wrong shoes and the blue arms. The real Sonic himself and I are seriously not amused.
Oh my gosh.
He even stated himself that he is beyond ashamed and embarrassed of this movie. And all of the lack of appreciation of the original source materials, as well as respect for him and this abomination of a flick. He doesn't comment on the Jim Carrey as Robotnik. I thought he might have some take on that, but
I mean, what was it? They had like that post credits like spoiler thing where like it was Jim Carrey with a bald head and the big mustache. And yeah. Honestly, like I guess I don't have like a problem really with Jim Carrey being Dr. Robotnik. I mean, kind of honestly, like, you know, if he's, like, bald and has, like, the big mustache, then that will work.
He has on those glasses that Robotnik sometimes has.
Yeah, I think he does. I think he's going to, I think he pulls, like, a Robotnik, you know, pretty well. But it's, like, 90s comedy Jim Carrey where it's, like, the Grinch on levels, and that could either be good or bad, so.
Yeah, I watched the James Rolfe and Mike Matei talk about it, and they were saying, like, they can't help but think of Jim Carrey as just Jim Carrey. He's doing
a, yeah.
Like, stands out so much. So that's a movie that's going to happen, maybe, unless it's like so negatively received that they just cancel it or something. But, yeah, I mean, the movie does look pretty bad. There's like this really cringy scene where this human companion, I don't even know who he's supposed to be. He has like Sonic in a bag and he's talking to Sonic in like the elevator or the bathroom or something. And there's all these other people there and they're like,
oh, yeah.
Is that a baby in the bag? Is that, well, no, not exactly. It's not my baby. And they're like, it's someone else's baby? It's just really, like, cringy. And
yeah, it's stupid.
Yeah, that movie is going to suck.
Pretty much. I just know the fact that they had, like, Dangerous or Gangster's Paradise playing as, like, the music to the... I'm like, Gangster's Paradise? Like, like, how does that even, like, you know, like, when match up to a movie trailer, like, that's not, like, it's like someone was like, we need a song that's rap. What's your favorite rap artist? And they asked, like, the white girl or, like, the white guy that's in his mid-30s is like, well, I mean, I remember listening to Coolio a lot. What was that one song he did? Gangsta's Paradise. All right, we'll throw that in there. We'll call it a day. And that was basically it.
Yeah, they got some, like, Gen Xer, like, ghost who's like, you know, the real OGs back in the early 1990s, well, that was what rap music was all about. But now these rap musicians, the messages they're sending to the kids, they're making them shoot up the schools. And
I mean, even they could have went with like DMX's X Gonna Give It To You. Like that would have worked too. Or like a DMX song. Anything but like Coolio just didn't, that trailer was just, it's just bad. And I like how Mr. Manticore was just like his title of that video, when he reviewed it was like, this is going to win an Oscar in 2019.
It's going to win a Razzie for first
movie. Oh God. It's going to win something. So.
Yeah. A lot of people were saying, oh, Detective Pikachu looks so much better. I was seeing that comment.
I'm not even really that thrilled to see Detective Pikachu, to be honest.
Yeah, me neither. I don't think it looks good. The concept of like Deadpool as Pikachu is just so weird.
Yeah,
I can't get used to it. And the CGI, I know it's like better than the Sonic CGI, but it still looks fake to me. I mean, there's no way to make Pokemon look real, in my opinion.
Yeah.
They should be animated, like 2D animated, basically.
Pokemon don't look good in 3D. They gotta be cell animated, because that's how the real Pokemon should always look forever, just like a Gundam.
Right.
Making fun of Gundam nerds there.
Right. I remember we were talking to them over the whole, like.
Oh, yeah, Gundam the Origin thing, yeah.
Yeah. I don't mind, like CGI. In like video games or something, like Pokemon Stadium or Coliseum, but when you're trying to make the CGI like realistic, and you say like these are Pokemon in the real world, like that's just too, I don't know, too weird.
Yeah, it's just, yeah. I mean, Detective Pikachu, like I can't see myself seeing that movie.
Yeah, it's like this kid's, he needs to find his parents, and he's gonna have a journey along the way. It's such a generic plot.
Yeah.
and then it's like a G-rated version of Deadpool of like Pikachu making these lame quips about just nonsense or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think this is about 20 years too late. Like maybe people would have loved a like big budget Pokemon movie in like 1999 or something, like when the Mewtwo movie was theaters. But
I mean, even if they made a Pokemon movie like in the early 2000s, that would have worked. Like it's a live action.
Yeah, but it's so past its prime at this point.
Yeah, that's why like the Sonic movie just looks like a bad 90s video game movie. It's like, it looks like on the levels of the Mario Brothers movie. And that's that's the exact same like category and like the level of quality you're gonna get on the Sonic movie. It was like they dug up a script from like 1994, and like they're like, okay, hey, we can get this out of development hell finally, and let's make it 25 years later. And it's just like it's way too late.
Yeah, I mean the best case scenario is that it's like a movie that. Is like just a complete meme. I mean, that could be.
The Sonic movie looks no different to me as if it was made in the 90s and they had like a kid in a blue Sonic the Hedgehog costume. Like, you get a teenager with a giant blue mohawk and his name's Sonic. That is a 90s Sonic movie right there. It's like what they did with Dennis Hopper in the Mario Brothers movie, where he basically he's you know Bowser or whatever, but he's like basically has like you know short spiky hair, and he's just like an angry white old guy with short spiky hair as Dennis Hopper. That's the Mario Brothers movie. Oh God. Yeah, that's a 90s movie, a video game movie right there. I mean, shoot, that makes Double Dragon look good.
Yeah. That movie is sort of entertaining just in a bizarre, like, what were they thinking level.
It is. I've seen that movie, I know we saw that movie once on, like, a family vacation, and my brother and my family were like, this was the dumbest thing we've ever seen.
What year did you see it?
Well, I finally saw it, like, I think in this decade at some point. I think it was, like, maybe 2013, 14 when we saw it. We decided to rent it or something. My brother wanted to see it, or he brought it with us. And I was like, yeah, I've never seen this movie. I remember hearing about it when it first came out when I was like in second grade. And I never saw that entire time until we saw it a few years ago. And I was like, oh boy, so this is exactly what this movie is.
Yeah, I know that they're actually making like a new Mario movie, but it's going to be fully animated.
Oh.
By Illumination, I think they're called, the company that makes the Minions movies. So I feel like that is the way it should be. Video game movies, like,
yeah.
That's what James Roth and Mike and Taylor were saying in their video also, is they just think that Sonic should just be in, like, a fully digital world, you know, like, not hanging out with a bunch of, like, live-action people in, like, a car and in a bathroom or whatever, which is just so weird and awkward and cringe-inducing. Like, if you just have, like, a world, you know, like, the Sonic OVA from the 90s, like, that is all you really need for a Sonic movie, right? It has, like, Sonic fighting Metal Sonic.
Yeah, I've never even seen that Sonic anime. I haven't seen it yet. I know of it, but I've never seen it.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably, like, the most Sonic of all the Sonic animated things. You know, it feels like it could have been made by the same people who made, like, the Sega CD animation, Sonic CD.
Wow.
It's like that kind of era of, you know, relatively high budget, like OVA boom kind of stuff. I feel like it works pretty well. But I mean, there's no way that this new thing is going to feel anything like that. Okay. So I guess we've, covered a lot of stuff here.
Yeah. We're over 2 hours on this recording. So this will come out whenever, and I'm still working on the Galliant, editing. So,
okay.
Yeah.
This could come out before that, maybe even. Who knows?
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll go ahead and shut this down. Thank you for listening. And tune in next time to whatever comes after this episode. So, see you later, guys. All right.